The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribes, Sir Laurence Olivier in Theatre Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. Today's play is adapted from a story by Bret Hart. Many of you will already be familiar with his Tales of the West. His knowledge of those spacious days was gained from personal experience, for Bret Hart himself was one of the famous 49ers. He drew upon his own rich experiences for tales such as the one we'll tell today. I myself shall relate the story and play the part of Mr. John Oakhurst. Here, then, is The Outcasts of Poker Flat by Bret Hart. As Mr. John Oakhurst, gambler, stepped into the main street of Poker Flat on the morning of the 23rd of November, 1850, he was conscious of a change in its moral atmosphere since the preceding night. Two or three men, conversing earnestly together, ceased as he approached and exchanged significant glances. There was a Sabbath lull in the air, which, in a settlement unused to Sabbath influences, looked ominous. Mr. Oakhurst's calm, handsome face betrayed small concern in these indications. Whether he was conscious of any predisposing cause was another question.
Fine day, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Mild weather for the time of the year. Mark you? I can detect a touch of frost in the air. Or is that merely my imagination?
Maybe.
My first winter in Poker Flat, of course. So I don't hardly know when we'll be having the first fall of snow. Guess we won't have to wait long, though. There's plenty back there in the Sierras, and the nights are kind of cold.
Yeah.
Heard any more about that holdup down in the gulch?
Yeah, we heard.
Yeah. You reckon you know who did it?
We know plenty, Oakhurst. You'll be knowing plenty yourself before much longer.
Well, at least you can't pin that one on me.
Maybe not. But there's going to be some changes in Poker Flat before much longer.
Yeah? Well, good day, gentlemen. Reckon they're after somebody. Likely it's me.
In point of fact, Poker Flat was after somebody. It had lately suffered the loss of several $1,000, two valuable horses, and a prominent citizen. It was experiencing a spasm of virtuous reaction, quite as lawless and ungovernable as any of the acts that had provoked it. The secret committee had determined to rid the town of all improper persons. This was done permanently next day in regard to two men who were hanged from the boughs of a sycamore in the gulch. Measures of a more temporary nature were then taken against Mr. Oakhurst.
Oakhurst, we're running you out of town.
May I ask why, gentlemen?
You're a no-good gambler, and this town's got no use for you or the likes of you.
You mean you aim to put a stop to card playing in Poker Flat?
That's right.
Well, as I've had the honor of playing with every one of you these last few months...
There was no card playing here till you came, Oakhurst.
You mean there wasn't a deck of cards here before I came? Now, wait a minute.
We mean we ain't gonna let no more strangers from Roaring Camp come here and clean us out.
I thought you were better losers, gentlemen. I apologize.
We ain't aiming to start no arguments, Oakhurst. We're running you out of town tomorrow. You and all your sort.
Without a trial? I see gentlemen in this room that I've lost to more than once. Are they coming with me?
If it hadn't been for some of us, you wouldn't have been gone, Oakhurst. You'd have been swinging back there in the gulch with Red and Cherokee.
Well, gentlemen, perhaps you're better losers than I thought. Some of you. Tomorrow it is, then. May I ask who'll be coming with me? I think you said some others.
Uncle Billy, the Duchess, and Mother Shipton. Starting out under escort at dawn.
Mr. Oakhurst received his sentence with philosophic calmness. He was too much of a gambler not to accept his fate. With him, life was at best an uncertain game, and he recognized the usual percentage in favor of the dealer. Next morning, a body of armed men accompanied him and the rest of the deported wickedness of Poker Flat to the outskirts of the settlement. The cavalcade provoked no comments from the spectators, nor was any word uttered by the escort until they reached the gulch which marked the outermost limit of Poker Flat.
Well, Oakhurst, that's your way, and I guess you don't need anyone to show you. If you ride hard, you'll be in Sandy Bar before dark. The rest's up to you.
Very hard ride for ladies.
Ain't no ladies making the trip, but I know.
Why, you...
If you know what's good for you, don't ever show up in Poker Flat again.
Speaking for myself, I ain't aiming to do that.
All right, then, don't. There's plenty more boughs on that old sycamore for any of you that we set eyes on. Now get moving. The lot of you.
The road to Sandy Bar lay over a steep mountain range. In that advanced season, the party soon passed out of the moist, temperate region of the foothills into the dry, bracing air of the Sierras. The trail was narrow and difficult. At noon, the Duchess, rolling out of her saddle upon the ground, declared her intention of going no further, and the party halted.
I ain't a-going another yard. It's plain murder, and I ain't going to stand for it.
Okay, ma'am, we'll take a little rest. We were hardly halfway through the mountains yet.
I don't care where we are. I ain't going no further.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but we'd be crazy to stop here for more than a half hour.
And we can camp out here, young fella. We're out of the wind here.
And we're not equipped for camping. We're short on provisions.
I don't care. I'm through.
If you'll pardon me, ma'am, there's no sense in throwing up your hand before the game's played out.
We got liquor, ain't we? What more provision do you need than a bottle of rye?
Thank you. I never touch it.
Well, I do. And this is one time, yes, sir.
Me too. Here, Mr. Oakhurst, drink this for the loan of your horse.
Thank you, ma'am. I never drink. I find it interferes with my profession.
The spot where they had halted was singularly wild and impressive. A wooded amphitheater surrounded on three sides by precipitous cliffs of naked granite sloped gently toward the crest of another precipice that overlooked the valley. Above them, the towering peaks of the Sierras were glittering white with snow. Before very long, the liquor had begun to make itself felt. Uncle Billy was in a state of stupor, the Duchess had become maudlin, and Mother Shipton had begun to snore. Mr. Oakhurst alone remained erect, leaning against a rock, surveying them. Last, he dusted his black clothes, washed his hands and face in a stream, and tried to forget his annoyance. The thought of deserting his companions never seemed to occur to him.
Why, hello there, Mr. Oakhurst.
Hello, Tom. Well met. What are you doing out here?
I'm on my way over to Poker Flat. Things a bit quiet back in Sandy Bar. I thought I'd try my luck someplace else.
And the young lady?
Oh, Miss Piney Woods. You remember Piney, Mr. Oakhurst? She used to wait on table at the Temperance House in Sandy Bar.
Why, yes, of course.
As a matter of fact, we're riding over to Poker Flat to be married. We've been engaged a long time, but old Jake Woods objected, so we're running away together.
Oh.
We aim to be married as soon as we get in.
Well, congratulations, Tom. I wish you every happiness, Piney.
Thank you, Mr. Oakhurst. Oh, gosh, am I tired.
Well, come on and meet the others here. Duchess, Mother Shipton, Uncle Billy.
Hiya.
Meet Tom Simpson, otherwise known as the Innocent from Sandy Bar, and Miss Piney Woods. They're going to Poker Flat to be married.
Well, nice place you picked here. You aiming to make a camp?
That's right. That's what I told him.
I reckon we ought to be pushing on, Tom. We've got no provisions with us, and we ought to be in Sandy Bar before nightfall.
No,
we're not leaving here at all.
Oh, that's all
right. We're staying right here.
We've an extra mule loaded up with provisions. I reckon we might have to make camp ourselves. We'll go shares with you.
Well, that's mighty neighborly of you, Mr. Simpson.
And there's a ruined log house just behind the trail about a half a mile back. Piney here can stay with Mrs. Oakhurst.
Mrs. Oakhurst?
Okay, Tom. The ladies can have the log house. Uncle Billy here, you and I can shift for ourselves.
Well, that's just fine. Piney here's ready to drop. It's a hard ride into town either way. Rest up for the night and start good and early. We'd be in by noon tomorrow.
That's just what I was telling him. We'd be crazy to go any further today.
Well, I guess if Tom here is willing to take us to a meal, we can afford the delay.
Well, I'll be glad to. After those $40 you gave me back that time, do you know what? He won $40 off me at poker, all the money I had. And then he takes me aside and gives them back to me. just so long as I never played poker again.
Can you imagine?
You're a good boy, Tommy, but you can't gamble worth a cent.
Mr. Oakhurst seldom troubled himself with sentiment, still less with propriety. But he had a vague idea that the situation was not fortunate. He would have been far happier if Tom Simpson had ridden off to his wedding and the outcasts had pushed on through the mountains while the daylight lasted. As it was, the scene very soon became animated. A fire was lit, for the evening turned cold and overcast, and the little party ate their meal and laughed and talked in the firelight. It was good to forget the darkness and the wind that rocked the tops of the pine trees, moaning through their long and gloomy aisles.
It sure would have been cold without a fire.
Well, the wind seems to be getting up back there. Well, I guess you ladies will be warm enough in the log house.
Won't be sorry to break camp in the morning and get on through the mountains.
Well, guess I'll be turning in. The heat of the fire has made me go all sleepy. You coming, Pine?
Oh, I surely am. I can hardly keep awake.
Well, young man, we thank you for the grub. It was mighty lucky meeting you.
Oh, you're welcome, ma'am. Well, good night, honey.
Night, Tom.
Good night, Mr. Simpson.
Well, so long, Mr. Simpson. Good night.
Good night, all.
The broken-down door of the old log house closed behind the ladies. The fire was replenished, and after a last look at the mules and horses, the men lay down before the crackling logs, and in a few minutes all were asleep. The wind moved restlessly through the pines, and the clouds drifted sullenly through the dark of the sky. The fire at last burnt low, and the warm ashes paled beside the dying embers. Mr. Oakhurst was a light sleeper. Toward morning, he awoke, benumbed and cold. As he stirred the dying fire, the wind, which was now blowing strongly, brought to his cheek that which caused the blood to leave it.
Snow. Hey, wake up, both of you. Tom. Uncle Billy. What the devil?
What is it? Is it morning?
Nearly. Where's Uncle Billy?
Where? Why, he's gone.
He's gone, and so are the mules. It's snowing, man. Don't you realize? We'll be snowed in.
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
There's listening fare for all the family tomorrow on NBC. Your Sunday concert from Carnegie Hall brings you Maestro Arturo Toscanini conducting the NBC Symphony in an all-Beethoven program. With income tax returns very much on everyone's mind, Alan Melville, noted British humorist and commentator, offers to export Great Britain's income tax system over here, while Roland Mitchell, Yale professor of history, takes a more serious note and recounts the historical background of the March 15th ritual in this country. All this on the Comprehensive Cultural Collector's Item Show. Then, for the week's news events, all the family will enjoy their Sunday newspaper of the air weekend from cover to cover. Hear the European reaction to the McCarthy-Stevens controversy, the NBC coverage of the Inter-American Conference in Caracas, Venezuela, as well as a feature story on the psychology of the juvenile delinquent. All tomorrow on your listening newspaper, Weekend. Later, everybody's favorite comedian Judy Holliday portrays the daydreaming damsel in Elmer Rice's delightful comedy, Dream Girl, on the NBC Star Playhouse. And don't miss the ever-loving but always involved Marriott as they argue an ethical point on the marriage. Make your date every Sunday with NBC.
And now we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Uncle Billy and the mules had gone. So had the horses. All had vanished into the silence of the night. Snow came whirling down, burying any tracks that might have been there to follow. By the time it was light, the snow was a foot deep, soft, and blown into treacherous drifts. There was no help for it. They were cut off completely from the rest of the world, imprisoned in the very heart of the mountains. And still the snow came down.
Why the
that drunken murderess...
Dawson will get us nowhere, Mother Shipton, besides which, remember the company.
What are we going to do? We'll starve to death up here. That snow won't be gone for days
yet. Oh, don't you worry, ma'am. Luckily, I stored most part of the provisions in the hut. I reckon we've enough food put by to last us for a full 10 days.
Well, that's if you're willing to board us, Tom. But it's not right that you and Piney should go short for us. Any case, Uncle Billy will likely be back with provisions in a day or two. Go check what we've gotten laid by in there, will you?
Right away, Mr. Oakhurst.
What's this nonsense about Uncle Billy coming back with provisions?
Shh, no,
Why,
Mother.
You know darn well we'll never
see
him again.
Sure, I know, Mother, but don't let on to the kids. They'll find out the truth about all of us when they find out anything. And there's no good scaring them now.
But they know he's gone and taken the mule.
Yeah. But I told him I'd guessed he must have wandered from the camp and stampeded them accidentally. I told him he'd likely be back when he'd caught them again, if he ever did.
And they believed that?
Kids can believe anything. They don't have to believe that a man can be as mean and bad as
that.
Oh, if you'll stop all this cussing, they'll believe what we seem to believe.
Well, we ain't likely to starve for quite a while yet, ma'am. There's plenty of food to last us for a day or two if we go easy on it. We'll have a good camp for a week, and then the snow will melt, and we'll all go back together.
Not to Poker Flat, we won't.
No, we'll all go back to Sandy Bar. Then we'll have Tom and Piney hide out in the woods while the rest of us go on into town and get them some more mules and provisions. Then we'll see them on their way again. Ain't that right, Tom?
Well, I guess that'll be the best, Mr. Oakhurst, if you're not coming back to Poker Flat with us.
Well, that we're not. It ain't any more healthy back there at Poker Flat.
Mother Shipton means we don't any of us like some of the folk who settle in there lately, Tom.
Why? Are they bad folk, you mean?
No. Well, I guess they're just folk we don't seem to get along with. Which is why we're trying our luck in Sandy Bar, just like you decided to try your luck in Poker Flat.
Oh, here's Piney. Hello there, honey. My, that's an armful of wood you've gotten.
The snow's getting real deep under the trees. We'd best lay in a stack of wood before it gets all buried under.
Well, that's right. If it gets any thicker, we won't even be able to get at the trees.
Well, come on, everyone. While we're all eating Tom and Piney's food, the least we can do is to fetch the wood for them. After all, if it hadn't been for us, they'd have been happily married by now.
Poor kids.
We don't mind, do we, Tom? It'll be fun having a camp up here for a day or two.
That's right, honey.
The cheerful gaiety of the young couple and Mr. Oakhurst's calm infected the other two. The innocent, with the aid of pine boughs, extemporized a thatch for the roofless cabin, and the Duchess directed Piney in the rearrangement of the interior with a taste and a tact that left her gayer still. That evening, when Mr. Oakhurst returned from yet another weary search for the trail, he heard the sound of singing and happy laughter echoed from the rocks. He stopped in some alarm, thinking of the whiskey that he'd prudently hidden. And if this didn't somehow sound like whiskey.
What's going on here? Everybody seems very happy.
Why, hello, Mr. Oakhurst. I brought this old guitar along with me in my pack, and I was giving the ladies a bit of a tune to cheer them up. Did you find the trail?
Not a sign of it. The snow's too soft to walk in. I guess there's no help for it. We'll just have to sit tight till it goes.
Sit down and have some supper, Mr. Oakhurst. It's good and warm here by the fire.
Thanks, Piney, but I'm not really hungry.
Not hungry? But you must be. You haven't eaten all day. Come on, have some of this cornbread.
Well, just a bite, then. Thank you.
I'll give you another tune to help your appetite.
But the luck didn't change. The third day came, and the sun, looking through the white-curtained valley, saw the outcasts divide their slowly decreasing store of provisions for the day. It also revealed drift on drift of snow piled high around the hut, a hopeless, uncharted, trackless sea of white lying below the rocky shores to which the castaways still clung. Through the marvelously clear air, the smoke of the pastoral village of Poker Flat rose miles away.
Poker Flat! May it burn in all the fires of hell.
Still cussing, Mother, or the kids will hear you.
Oh, no, they won't. I never cuss when they're around. But it sure does me good to cuss when I can.
I wish something would do me good. Just you go out there and see that smoke rising from Poker Flat and cuss and cuss. You just see if you don't feel better.
Well, I'll go see after the gal. She must be feeling pretty bad, poor thing. With Tom out of the camp.
Where's he gone?
Oh, getting wood if he can dig any out, and looking for the trail, which he'll never find.
So, with food and their hopes dwindling. A week passed over the heads of the outcasts. The sun again forsook them, and again from leaden skies the snowflakes were sifted over the land. Day by day, closer around them grew the snowy circle, until at last they looked from their prison over drifted walls of dazzling white that towered 20 feet above their heads. It became more and more difficult to replenish the fires, even from the fallen trees beside them, now completely hidden in the drifts. Yet no one complained. The lovers turned from the dreary prospect and looked into each other's eyes and were happy. Mr. Oakhurst settled himself coolly to the losing game before him. Only Mother Shipton seemed to sicken and fade.
Is that you, Oakhurst?
Yeah, Mother, it's me. How are you feeling?
I'm going, Oakhurst. But don't say nothing about it. Don't waken the kids. Take this bundle from under my head. Open it. That's right.
Where's this food come from? Had you hidden it?
It's my rations for the last 7 days. I just didn't eat it, that's all. I haven't been hiding it for myself. Give them to the kid, Piney.
You've starved yourself, you mean?
That's what they call it.
Is there anything I can do for you, Mom?
Yes. You can lay me to rest. Don't let the kids know.
That night, her face turned to the wall, Mother Shipton passed quietly away. When her body had been bedded in the snow next morning, Mr. Oakhurst moved away from the others and began to work away savagely at the pack saddle with his bowie knife.
What's that you're making, Mr. Oakhurst?
Well, if you can call it making. I've been cutting up this old pack saddle, trying to make a pair of snowshoes. If you can get to walk in them, there's one chance in 100 to save her yet, Tom.
Piney.
Yep. We don't have to fool ourselves any longer, Tom. Poor old Mother Shipton's gone. Another 3 or 4 days. Well, if you can reach Poker Flat in these 2 days, she'll likely still be alive when you get back with the rescue gang.
And you?
I'll stay here. Say, try these on.
Eh? Sure.
I'll bind it to your ankles. How's that? How do they feel?
Why? They feel fine. Here where the snow is hard.
Come and try them here where it's soft. They feel firm enough when you walk.
Yeah?
Because if you lose them out there in the soft snow, well, they work loose.
Oh, I'll be all right.
It's our only chance, Tom.
I know.
Where are you going, Tom? Can you walk in those things?
Well, I can try.
Where are you going?
I'm
going
to try and reach Poker Flat and fetch help.
Oh, Tom, it ain't safe. You'll never make it. Oh, Tom, stay here with me.
Now, I'll be all right, honey. Now, it's our only chance. If the snow holds like it's doing...
Oh, but Tom...
Well, Tom will be all right, Piney. He's going to take some of the food that's left. And with those snowshoes on, he'll be down to Poker Flat in a day and a night, and then he'll bring help.
He'll be all right, dear. I'll be here with you. Nothing will go wrong. It's the only thing we can do.
Well, goodbye, honey. I'll be back.
Bye, darling. Be careful.
I will. You look after her, Duchess?
You can trust me, Tom. Good luck.
Good luck?
Are you going too, Mr. Oakhurst?
As far as the canyon, Duchess.
Mr. Oakhurst turned suddenly and kissed her, leaving the pallid face of the Duchess aflame and her trembling limbs rigid. He helped the innocent to climb the breast of the snowbank and staggered after him, plunging waist-deep in the treacherous snow. In a couple of minutes, both were out of sight. Night came, but not Mr. Oakhurst. It brought the storm again and the whirling snow. Then the Duchess, feeding the fire, found that someone had quietly piled beside the hut enough fuel to last a few days longer. The tears rose to her eyes, but she hid them from Piney. The women slept but little. In the morning, looking into each other's faces, they read their fate. Neither spoke, but Piney, accepting the position of the stronger, drew near and placed her arm around the Duchess's waist. They kept this attitude for the rest of the day. That night, the storm reached its greatest fury, and rending asunder the protecting pines, invaded the very hut. Toward morning, they found themselves unable to feed the fire, which gradually died away. As the embers slowly blackened, the Duchess crept closer to Piney and broke the silence of many hours.
Piney.
Yes, Duchess.
Piney, can you pray?
No.
It don't matter.
Oh, come, rest your head on my shoulder, honey. There. That's
better. Piney.
Yes, honey.
Goodbye.
Not goodbye. Just good night.
Good night, Piney.
The wind lulled as if it feared to waken them. Feathery drifts of snow, shaken from the long pine boughs, flew like white-winged birds and settled about them as they slept. The moon through the rifted clouds looked down upon what had been the camp. But all human stain, all trace of earthly travail, was hidden beneath the spotless mantle mercifully flung from above. They slept all that day and the next. Nor did they waken when voices and footsteps broke the silence of the camp. And when pitying fingers brushed the snow from their wan faces, you could scarcely have told from the equal peace that dwelt upon them which was she that had sinned. Even the law of Poker Flat felt this, and turned away, leaving them still locked in each other's arms. But at the head of the gulch, on one of the largest pine trees, they found the deuce of clubs pinned to the bark with a bowie knife. It bore a message written in pencil with a firm hand.
Beneath this tree lies the body of John Oakhurst, who struck a streak of bad luck on the 23rd of November, 1850, and handed in his checks on the 7th of December, 1850.
And pulseless and cold, with a Derringer by his side and a bullet in his heart, lay he who had been at once the strongest and yet the weakest of the outcasts of Poker Flat. This is Laurence Olivier again. I should like to thank our cast who appeared in this week's adaptation of Bret Hart's story, The Outcasts of Poker Flat. They included Bessie Love, Margot Stevenson and Lois McLean, Lionel Merton, John Farrell, MacDonald Park and Arthur Hill. I shall next week, as usual, be looking forward to the pleasure of presenting and playing in another play. Until then, au revoir. And thank you.
Sir Laurence Olivier starred in today's transcribed program. The script was by Derek Patmore. The music was under the direction of Sidney Tort. Theatre Royal is an NBC presentation, produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
Here are the big preview with Maury Amsterdam and Fred Robbins on the NBC Radio Network.